My name is Pat Lovelace, and my husband and I are in Denver currently with the Navigators working under the Church Discipleship Ministry. This is a new facet of the Navigators. It incorporates the 2-7 discipleship series that probably a number of you have heard about, but it includes more than that. We're really trying to serve the local church and to help people within the church build up other disciples that the church might really do the work of the ministry as the Lord has asked it to do. I came to know the Lord at McAllister College back in St. Paul, Minnesota, 1,000 years ago, I'm sure. And it was through the ministry of Doug Sparks on campus there. And then after I finished college, I came out here to Glen Eyrie and was here for a number of years getting training, and then went out to the San Francisco Bay Area to work with the girls there for 6 wonderful years. I really enjoyed my time out there, and some of us are having a reunion this noon, so I'm really looking forward to that. Then I came back to Glen Eyrie. Lauren Sanny's secretary, Millie Hopkins, needed to go back and take care of her mother in California for a couple of years, so I was having such a good time with the girls' work. But as I came here that first night of the conference, I had prayed, Lord, I don't know. I wonder if you have a change for me in mind. And if Lauren should ask me to come back here, I'm willing. I don't know why I prayed that night. The next day I walked into the great hall downstairs and Lauren went like this across the room. I thought, well, Lord, I know what you were saying to me last night. So I came back for 2 years to be his secretary. I am not a secretary by skill, by any means, but I learned a lot. But it was during that time that I feel like the Lord continued to give me ministry with girls. And then I wasn't sure what the next step would be when his secretary, Millie, would come back. And that's when I met my husband, Bob, here at the Glen. And then we were married, and we went to campus in Greeley, University of Northern Colorado, for 2 years, 3 years, and then down to Tucson. And then Ron Ortley was developing the 2-7 discipleship course in Denver at that time. And he needed some help. So my husband, Bob, and Bob Wilbraham, some of you know Margie Wilbraham, came to Denver to help complete the 2-7. So that's how we ended up in Denver. We have one daughter, Heather, 14. I married a little late, so we just managed one a child, and we're really enjoying our ministry now. I take it that most of you who are here in the workshop are involved in a church ministry of some kind, or you want to be. You know, I'm just taking that for granted that you are. I'd like to know how many of you came to know the Lord through the Navigators on a campus situation or some situation. Ah, that's several. How about being discipled? How many of you feel that you personally have been discipled by someone in the past? Excellent. That's encouraging, isn't it? One of the things I wanted to start with today, I'm not a seminary graduate, so I do not usually have 3 points. Sometimes I have the 3 points you're supposed to have, but today it's 2 points, and they're very simple. Motivation and methods. We want to talk about the motivation to disciple others and a little bit about the methods of discipling others. You know, as I think about it, I like to ask this question of people. Aren't you glad that someone cared enough about you to disciple you? I mean, doesn't that really encourage you as you think about it? When I became a Christian in college, the Navigators asked a gal from a Bible college to come over to the campus and help some of us who had become Christians. And this gal taught me how to study the Bible, how to pray, how to witness, how to obey the Lord, you know, to walk with Him. Those were such simple things, but I knew none of them. I was so afraid to pray in those days. We'd have a little prayer meeting at noon, and I'd always seem like they always started the prayer time at the other end, and I was at the very end chair over here, and I just panicked because everybody else had prayed what I was going to pray. And, you know, I barely get a sentence out. Have you been in that spot yourself, you know? Well, this gal, Ruth, really took me under her wing and taught me how to pray. We prayed about a test in French. We prayed about the salvation of my family, just a number of things. And it was such a very special learning time for me. Then when I came to Glen Eyrie, I thought, well, I need some more help. I still need help in my life. And during this time, I was kind of observing a few of the older gals who were here and wondering, now, Lord, who would you have me to get close to? And one of them stood out. Above the others, they were all really neat. But one stood out, and her name was Addie. And she was such a challenging person to me. I thought, boy, I wonder if I could ever have the standard of excellence that she has or be like she is. And she started teaching me by her life as much as by her words, the way she would react to some difficult situations and the way she'd handle them. And I mentioned standard of excellence, and you know, that was true whether it was in helping someone type a letter at the office or whether it was in cleaning the room, you know, over at Eagle's Nest or just whatever. She had a real standard of excellence and she lived it. And I thought, well, this lady has walked with you, Lord, and I want to walk with you like she has. So I hung on her doorknob or whatever, the screen door or whatever it was, and I really did trail her around during those years. The word that we use for that now, that term of someone living the life, is modeling. I'm sure you've all heard that term used. And that's exactly what she was doing. She was modeling. And you know, the longer I walk with the Lord, the more I realize how important the modeling is. It's more important than what you say. It's your life. And in the local church, I think people are really watching our lives, you know, to see, now look how she reacted in that situation. She served that lady when she really needed help. And we forget that sometimes. You know, we feel we have some skills we want to teach people, and they're not wrong. They're necessary. But we're so anxious to get our little thing across that we forget that what people really see first is our life before the Lord. You know, sometimes you contact someone or you get and you share a few words of wisdom and they get kind of excited. But that kind of thing doesn't last, I feel. It's the life along with what you share that makes a permanent impact on an individual. Well, I'd just like to ask, what do you think your current spiritual temperature is? How do you feel about yourself right now as a model or as someone who is really walking with the Lord? You know, I find in my own life that at times I tend to count on my past experiences to get me through where I am now. My walk with the Lord or things that I did at one time, I think, well, that's going to take me through. No, it won't. We have a cassette player that our 14-year-old daughter loves to take along when we go in the car somewhere, and it's a great little instrument if you remember to plug it in every night. If you don't, there's no tape to be played the next day. And I thought, well, that's kind of like our lives. If we aren't kept constantly plugged into that source of a personal walk with the Lord and fellowship with Him, then we're going to run out of batteries, just like that little cassette player does. And you know, sometimes I think we speak beyond our experience when we do that. And I remember one of the turning points in my life. It's always kind of hard to share this, but it was just such a big stepping stone for me. I had been teaching school in town here in Colorado Springs for a year, and then I felt that the Lord really wanted me to be in the training program here at Glen Eyrie. So I talked to Addie about this, and she said, well, she'd talk to Dawson Trotman about it and see what he thought. So I was kind of scared about that. And then the next thing I knew, she called me into his office. He was not there. And she said, you know, Pat, we really would like to have you stay here at the Glen and be involved in the training program. But you know, she said, there's one thing I think you need to work on, and that is that I think you're talking beyond your experience. And that was hard to hear. But you know what, gals? I knew in my heart of hearts that was true. I had picked up a lingo. Now, some of the things I was doing I really meant, but I knew that there were things that I had the lingo and I could talk the language, but it wasn't really inside of here. And instead of that being a defeat for me, I thought, boy, here's the gal that has the courage, you know, and the wisdom from the Lord to step into my life and tell me that. And that really turned my life around. So if anyone ever has to step into your life like that, don't be afraid of it. You know, God has a purpose for it. I'm sure you've all had a great time with Anne speaking this week. And I know that she shared some neat things with you from Esther. I wish I could have heard some of them. And I just trust that you'll be able to set some goals, you know, from the things you've learned in workshops and from what Anne has said. I'd like us to look at a passage. It's on your little sheet that you have, Colossians 1, 28 and 29. This is a passage that is so motivating to me, or has been over the years. Oops, I don't have the Phillips translation on there. Does anyone have an extra copy of that I can just look at? Hey, Charles, you just read it, why don't you? It's in the Phillips. Are you sure? Okay. So naturally, we proclaim Christ. We warn everyone we meet. and we teach everyone we can all that we know about Him, so that if possible, we may bring every man up or every woman up to her full maturity in Christ. This is what I am working at all the time with all the strength that God gives me. Isn't that a neat verse? I love that in Phillips' translation. And you can just see the heart of Paul, can't you? You know, this is what I am working at all the time with all the strength that God gives me. And then skip down to 1 Thessalonians 2:20. Paul's conclusion of that second chapter, that's such a beautiful picture of his watch care and his love for his disciples. And at the end of that passage in 1 Thess 2:20, he says, "For you are our glory and joy." What is your glory in life? What is your joy? You know, I have a lot of things that are my joy in life, my family. Other members of my family I've seen come to Christ. But you know, it's some of these gals that are really walking with the Lord today that God has given me a chance in the past to minister to them. Those are really glory and joy, and they really please the heart of the Lord. I just wanted to, before, we're going to break up into groups in a minute and discuss that, but I wanted to mention Isaiah 60:22. Lauren Sani has often used this verse in messages. Isaiah 60:22, a small one shall become a thousand, a little one shall become a thousand, a small one shall become a strong nation. And the potential of reaching one gal, one lady, and to disciple her and to see her life multiplied. There's just nothing like that challenge. There's nothing like it. And this was some 35 years ago, I guess, that I first started thinking about this, that my life got turned around. You see, I felt I had been helped so much myself personally that that's what I wanted to give my life back to. I just wanted to give my life back to doing that because it had meant so much to me. And I think that's what we need to think about. Let's break up into buzz groups just for about 5-7 minutes and look at Colossians 1:28 and 29 and see what we can come up with some thoughts on the characteristics of a disciple maker from that passage. Why don't you just break, I like to just do this with like your group over here and fours or fives here and four or five over here and just come up with some ideas, some characteristics of a disciple maker from that passage. Okay, we can just do it quickly and then we'll get back together in a few minutes. Do you want this back, Paige?
Oh, they gave me another one.
Oh, they did? Here, take this one.
Oh, excuse me.
That's fine. Yeah. Weta, why don't you just lead that group and see, or two of you, Jan and Myra, and I don't know anyone in that group back there. Betty Charles, just kind of lead off and think of some characteristics of disciple makers. Then we'll share together. So dry. Thanks. You're getting near the end. Okay. Got two more minutes and then we'll close up and have you share some of the things you found.
Mind. look good. She's put on weight. But she still has Janine. You know, she's just, yeah, she's fun. And, I didn't get to meet her boy, though. I didn't see him. Oh, Dallas has changed. More buildings. I mean, it's really boom, isn't it?
She was sorry she couldn't come. It was my
favorite. Oh, yeah, I bet. Yeah, that's what I thought. I wish she could have. She would have loved it. Did anyone else come from there with you?
You can bring up Marquita's here.
Yeah, I saw Marquita. Yeah.
I don't know why Martha Bell didn't
come. Oh, I wish she had.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah. Yeah, but I haven't seen her, and I'm afraid I won't see her. Oh, she's blonde. I might have seen her, and I didn't. Probably wouldn't have recognized me. Okay, why don't we get together now and share some of the things that you found. This is a neat passage, isn't it? It's worth thinking about over and over again. Okay, let's start at the first part, and anyone want to share something they came up with? Could I see your sheet again or someone's sheet? I'm lost. Can you get along without it? Can you look on yours? What are some of the things you found, the characteristics that stood out to you? Just speak out. It's fine.
Boldness.
Boldness. Okay. Boldness. Good. What else?
Zeal.
And zeal. Yes, a lot of zeal. Now, does zeal have to be real outgoing and gushy? What is zeal? How would you define that?
Intense enthusiasm.
Yes, enthusiasm, intensity, wholehearted. Uh-huh. Those are good words for it. Single-minded, another good word for that. That's right. Okay, what else did you discover disciple maker should be?
Indiscriminate. You know, they say everyone, everyone. And sometimes I feel that I'm so careful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this, he doesn't seem to be that careful initially.
Mm-hmm. We get kind of picky, don't we?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I decide this person may or may not be interested, and I can't tell that he decided for the person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. You see, I was going to mention that a little later, but let me just bring it up now. I think sometimes that we do the selecting according to what we're looking for and not necessarily going to the Lord first and asking Him, Lord, who are you looking for? Because the Lord is the only one who can look on the heart. I remember out in the Bay Area, I was over meeting with a couple of gals at the county hospital in Oakland, California, and they said, oh, come on, we want you to meet this gal, Diane. We've been, you know, trying to share the Lord with her and befriending her and all. And so we went down the hall and knocked on the door, and the door opened. And there was this gal sitting there with a cigarette in her hand, and she was studying and looking very unfriendly. And they were all excited about her. So we were introduced, and, you know, she said, hi. You know how those conversations go. And, well, it wasn't long after that that Diane became a Christian. And these gals, the nurses, nursing students, were so faithful to share the Lord with her. They just felt she was the one that was going to come to know the Lord. So in years past now, that was a long time ago, she's been with the NAS 10 years, raising up disciples in Japan. She just came home a couple years ago and was working with girls in Southern California. And then the Lord had a neat surprise, a fellow that she had known when they were ministering at the university in Seattle. Felt that God really wanted her to be his wife. So I think all my old friends are still age 25, 26 when I knew them then. But Diane's about 40. She had all this experience behind her. And now the two of them are headed off to Ethiopia, where he has a really great ministry. He is there to help the Ethiopians use the soil the way they should. But I think he has about 100 people around in Bible study and contacts. So Diane's just going on. And I, every once in a while, you know, I thought when I talked to her before she was married, and I thought back to that gal sitting in that dorm room. I thought, Lord, you're a better selector than I am, really. Okay, go ahead. What else do you have?
Uh-huh. Along that line, the if possible seems to communicate that there is some selectivity, but maybe that they select themselves out, that we can't be discriminate. But
interesting point. Now, how would they select themselves out? What would you mean by that?
Well, continually turning down opportunities to learn or to grow in their relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
or not wanting to be in Bible study, or not applying the word obedience.
Mm-hmm. Or the opposite of that would be what? you know, selecting themselves out, what would be some of the things that you would look for?
Learners.
Yes, learners. That's a big one, isn't it? And I think another thing, a hungry heart. You know, that comes under being a learner. I hope I never stop being a learner. I hope I always have a hungry heart. Always. Forever. Okay, what else?
Could that also mean that maybe you're working with someone who maybe the Lord really didn't have in mind for you, so when it's saying, if possible, that maybe the Lord has someone else to bring into full maturity?
Have you ever experienced that? I have. You know, and as you read in some of these, there are a lot of new discipleship books out. I'll mention some to you, but I've noticed that they'll mention in the books that, you know, they had worked with someone and they just didn't seem to be the one that would take that person on, or the person never did go on. You know, there was just a complete flop out of anything at all after that. That's an interesting point, too. Okay, anything else? Weta, what'd you all come up with?
Oh, I could have lots of ideas.
Great.
And the one just brought up, going back to the word naturally, that this is something that as a disciple, that it comes naturally to us. It doesn't have to be something that's forced, because
it's good.
We proclaim what we know. That to proclaim Christ, one is first to know Christ.
Good.
Fundamentally. And then we warn, we have the idea that there should be maybe a sense of urgency, especially today. Awareness. And if we warn people, then that might show it would be, we have to have maybe a bit of courage to do that.
Right.
A heart that cares.
I like that point, one who cares. And on your sheet down at the bottom where it says 1 Thessalonians 2:8, Paul is saying, having thus a fond affection for you, for we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. And I think caring is an absolute essential in disciple making. That's good. Anything else on your list you had? Lots of things. I mean, okay. Anyone else want to mention something they had?
Communicate.
Yes, you do.
Not everybody can. There are people who communicate better than others, but some verbal skills are certainly.
Can those skills be learned, do you think?
Yes.
I think they can. I have known some very quiet, shy girls that I thought, now, will they ever really be able to communicate? And they do. They now do. They've learned. You know, the Lord has helped them, and they've gotten some skills. So it is possible. Okay? Something else. Jan?
We were thinking that this is what I'm working at all the time, might connotate consistency, but it's not hit or miss. But and that might also mean that it's important to have some kind of a structure or a plan and a goal. Maturity is the goal that you would want to be sure you were teaching them everything that God had for them to know that made it possible for them to be mature Christian.
Okay. That's helpful, all of that.
Another one is sensitivity. Pull that from the line to bring up every man to his full maturity so that you recognize the differences between personalities,
that's right.
Depth of ability to take in, etc.
That's right, and that is extremely important. I've always appreciated Lauren Sandy's message on the worth of the individual. He speaks of that as one of the basic tenets of the navigators, and I hope we never lose that, ever. And I think, and we'll talk about this a bit, I think this happens some in the church, because I think we get into programs, and I think individuals maybe get left out. We'll touch on that a little bit more later, but that is really important. Okay, anything else? Take a couple more. Myra?
All that we know about him, we talked about intimacy with the Lord. This has been emphasized here.
Oh, that's so important. Good.
When it says with all the strength that God gives me, really depending on God.
His empowering.
You know, he's the one who's going to do anything that happens in our life.
That's right. He is the master builder, isn't he? In people's lives. That's right. Betty Charles, you had one then.
We mentioned that this requires a giving person, someone who's people-oriented, not lazy.
That's right. That's right. You're not going to sit there and have people just dropped in your lap while you're sitting at home doing something else.
sí. attitude that they recognize that their strength is in the Lord rather than in themselves.
Uh-huh.
That they are, as you mentioned, filling themselves up.
Mm-hmm. You see, disciple making can be mechanical, and I wish it couldn't be, but it can be, because we can get a certain little plan and a certain little program and think, this is what this is going to produce. And I know we found in our church, and as Bob has worked in a number of other churches, that someone will come in and say, this is the program you need. This is going to solve all your problems, you know, about your discipleship, your evangelistic outreach, the color of your carpet, you know, all these things that go on in a church. They don't if the individual is not emphasized, because a program is not anything in itself. It's only as individual needs are met. So that's a really good point. Let's go on a little, and then we'll come back to some of these things. When Bob and I first came to Denver, we had not been real active in a church before. We'd been members, but we'd not been totally immersed in the life of a church. And so we started at this little church, and I'd always gone to, I like big Presbyterian churches with stained glass windows. So we went to this little church, the men in the school. There were 75 people there. But we loved the people. We really felt that's where God wanted us. Now the church has grown since then quite a bit. But as we went there, we thought, well, we are here to serve. That's why we're in this church. We're not coming here with the attitude that, boy, we've got something you guys need to know. You know? And that's what we can do sometimes. Even as an individual, we can come in and think, well, I know the answer to that. We just wanted to serve. So not too long after that, Bob became an elder, and I got involved with the women's ministries and starting a Bible study group. We help people move. And we helped them pack. We helped visit in hospitals. We did all sorts of things that just met needs of people. And every once in a while I'd say to myself, now, is this part of the ministry? Is this what we're supposed to be doing? Well, I wish I could have an hour to tell you what God has taught me about what the ministry is in these last years. It's meeting the needs of people. You have a goal in mind. You want to prepare disciple makers to disciple others. But while you're doing that, you're a caring person, you're a loving person, and you're meeting needs of people. And boy, the Lord has just brought us through so many things that have taught us that. Mark 10:45 says, Jesus came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. And what does it mean to serve? It does mean to take a meal to a gal whose husband has been ill, or she's just had a baby, or, you know, all these things that are kind of menial. We think of them as menial, but they can mean so much. And I think of a man in our church that became a Christian because some of the women brought meals in and helped clean the house when his wife had a baby. He could not get over it. He couldn't get over it. So he started coming to church, became a Christian. Through just some women taking a little bit of time, I mean, how long does it take you to make a meal or to go clean someone's house? Oh, just many illustrations I could give along that line. Jerry White, I think, has written an excellent book on the church and the parachurch, An Uneasy Marriage. Have any of you read this? Are you familiar with it? I'll leave these here so you can look at them afterwards. The Church and the Parachurch, An Uneasy Marriage. And he talks a lot about, you know, people with other organizations outside the church coming in and working within the church. And it's really a revealing book. And as I read that, I thought, well, there's really no room for competition in God's work. There's no room for competition. Praise God that there are parachurch groups who are doing what they're doing. Praise God for the local church. No, they're all trying to serve the Lord and walk with Him. So we need to cooperate and work along with that. I just read this book. Have any of you read this yet by Bill Hall? It's a new NAV, well, not real new, fairly new NAV Press book, Jesus Christ Disciple Maker. He has some very good things to say. He's a pastor of an evangelical free church in Southern California now. And I had not known anything about him before, but he really goes through a lot of basics of disciple making. And I would suggest that you read, I'd say this book over any of the books that I brought today. This is excellent. He says, there is probably no other primary matter of negligence in the church today than our failure to follow the Lord's command to develop disciples. Because of this gross neglect, many Christians think of themselves as an audience to be entertained rather than an army to march. And I don't know how you are, but I know in Denver, everybody comes through Denver. You can go hear anybody that you want to, whether it's music or speaker. And it's hard sometimes to think about getting together with people, and eventually they're busy because Friday night they go to Friday nights in Denver, Saturday night they go to hear, maybe Dobson's in town, and all good things, but there's just so much. And I think sometimes, yes, we really enjoy being entertained, don't we? And I thought that was a good point of his. The first century church, composed of a tiny band of committed people, brought the mighty Roman world to its knees. Small church. And he says, goes on to say, since indeed discipleship is the primary thrust of the commission we have been given, we must stop tacking it on our existing structure as a subordinate program in order to ease our guilt. Discipleship must function as the heart of our church ministry. In fact, most programs should be evaluated in light of whether or not they are in some way contributing towards developing disciples. And that's really not usually true in the church today. And he's saying that's the way it should be. Anyway, I do highly recommend this book. When there was a young couple in our church that, when we first started going there, John and Sandy became Christians through the former pastor that we had. Then they got into the church, and they really kind of took off, you know, really fast, like a little sparkler or something in their Christian lives, and they'd come from no Christian background whatsoever, a church background. But it wasn't long before they started looking around, and they told us in their testimony later, and said, you know, other people were not witnessing. You know, here they were trying to witness to their relatives and, you know, the cat down the street and everybody that moved, they were witnessing to them. And they said, but nobody else was witnessing. Or they didn't hear about it or whatever. And they just thought, they couldn't imagine what was wrong. Maybe they were the oddballs and they came to feel that way. Have you ever felt that or have seen that? And that's really a shame, isn't it, you know, for a young couple like that. Then they got involved in one of the 2-7 discipleship groups in our church and really began to grow again. And I tell you, they put to shame some of the rest of us in that group with the way they applied what they were learning. But as I saw that in their lives, I thought, yes, that is not right to bring them into a group like that as new Christians and then just see mediocrity. But that's what happens. But I think God can change that. I really do, and I think he's at work in the church, and I think he's going to. Okay, let's talk a little bit about some methods for recruiting potential disciples. First thing where we need to start is prayer, and I'm thoroughly convinced of this, that as we approach any new situation or we want God to use us, we must begin with prayer. Psalm 37:5 in the Living Bible says, commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him to help you do it, and he will. That's good, isn't it? Commit everything you do to the Lord. Trust him to help you do it, and he will. And I think as we start looking for disciples, that's where we need to begin. Lord, bring some names to mind. Make me keenly aware. Make me sensitive to people, to their needs. Lord, just let me be a vessel, you know, where I might encourage people and be able to pick some out. And I remember Doug Sparks saying one time, a long time ago, he said, you know, if there's someone in this city seeking the Lord, Christian or non-Christian, they're really seeking God. And then, he said, if there's a Christian who is really praying that they might be used in someone else's life, he said, don't you think it's within the power of Almighty God to bring those two people together? Well, of course it is. He can bring you together. So I really believe that it starts with that prayer in our hearts that God will use us. I think groups are your best resource pools in the church. Getting involved in some group situations or starting up some, and I'm going to suggest some to you later. My husband uses a funnel illustration when he's talking to church people, pastors or laymen, when you look at the ministry in the church, but he feels that, first of all, I'll get all tangled up with the cord. If you can imagine a funnel, and at the top, is the church. People come to church, and that's a nice big group. And then next down, you get people who are maybe a little more interested, and they will come to Sunday school. And then maybe you'll get some people in what we call growth groups. Those might be like a Wednesday night group or a group doing a general type of Bible study or whatever. And then you'll come down to discipleship, and that can be either on an individual basis or it can be in a group discipleship situation, like using the 2-7 as a tool. And I think what we need to do is to get involved you know, at the top, meeting people at church, meeting them in Sunday school, maybe having a chance to teach a Sunday school class, whatever, and then going on into growth groups, being involved in that, and then praying for opportunities for some discipleship people to come out of those other groups. And that's where I think it comes, looking for people and keeping your eyes open. When I look around at people, I look for someone who has an interest in other people. That's one of the first things I look for. Someone who is very ingrown may not be the kind of disciple at first or the one that maybe would take a little bit longer to work with. I look for someone who isn't necessarily all outgoing, but at least seems to show a concern. And I do this in church on Sundays. I'll watch for people who seem to go up to a newcomer and talk to them, or the person next to them. Or maybe when I'm talking to them, they'll say, did you know that so-and-so really was feeling, you know, not well this last week? And the fact that she noticed that rings a bell with me. I think, aha, here's a sensitive person. That's someone to look for. We mentioned before the idea of someone whose heart is hungry. As you get to talking to people, you know how easily they talk about the Lord, don't you? Spiritual things. Some people just do not talk about spiritual things very much. We have something in our church called fellowship dinner groups, and they, with a computer now, of course, in this modern age, they combine all these people back and forth every 3 months, and then the couples and singles meet with them in dinner groups. And I've had several people who have been hostesses or hosts of the dinner group say that, you know, we never talked about the Lord in our dinner group. And I thought, interesting, very interesting. Why would any group of Christians getting together not say something about the Lord? That was really hard for me to accept at first. And then I realized, that's more the norm. That is more the norm in a lot of situations. We did a Bible study this year in our women's group on the ministry of encouragement. And I would suggest that you might try something like this, whether you're single or a married gal with the group, that it might be something to do. See, I feel strongly that people are not encouraged enough. And if you want to win someone's heart, you encourage them. And you will win their heart, by all means. There's an excellent book that we use, just kind of a text to follow, The Power of Encouragement. Are you familiar with this by Jean Daring? Are you familiar with that? She's a gal that, she was with Wycliffe for a little bit, but I can't tell whether she's with, she might be with IV now, InterVarsity. I'm not sure, but it is excellent. She touches on everything from how to deal with people who have faced the loss of a loved one, or illness, or just what to do, how she calls that the silent love, just being there with people. And we've learned a lot about that, of being around people who are in the hospital with someone who is ill or dying, and just being there. It's so important. But I would recommend using a study like that, because that's where people's needs are. And we'll talk about that more in a minute, but I wanted to mention this book to you for sure. Don't you love to be encouraged? I do. It is such a boost to me. We just got a new puppy. We only had two dogs, so we really needed a new puppy, and that's what I got for Mother's Day. I love dogs. But it, along with the dog came this book, and it said, How to Train a Puppy You Can Live With. Now, that sounds important and good. But you know, one of the things they say about training puppies is that every time they do something right, if they're even just sitting still on the floor, praise them. That any time they're doing anything that's right, praise them. And I thought, I bet that would work with kids and with adults. And, you know, but many times we don't, do we? Do we ever just look for things to encourage people about on a Sunday morning at church? Or, you know, if we're visiting with them afterwards or having them in our home? It is such a boost to me. We just got a new puppy. We only had two dogs, so we really needed a new puppy, and that's what I got for Mother's Day. I love dogs. But along with the dog came this book, and it said, How to Train a Puppy You Can Live With. Now, that sounds important and good. But you know, one of the things they say about training puppies is that every time they do something right, if they're even just sitting still on the floor, praise them. That any time they're doing anything that's right, praise them. And I thought, I bet that would work with kids and with adults. And, you know, but many times we don't, do we? Do we ever just look for things to encourage people about on a Sunday morning at church? or, you know, if we're visiting with them afterwards or having them in our home, do we really have that in our minds that we want to boost somebody up and build them up? The new discipleship journal that just came this week has some good articles on that, the idea of building others up in the faith and in the body. That is just so important. But I do recommend that Power of Encouragement book to you. This last fall, I was really burdened for young mothers in our church. I thought, here they are, all these little babies and kids and toddlers, and I don't hear any teaching going on for these women to tell them how to be a mother or how to have a quiet time in the midst of all this hectic, you know, no sleep, tears, all these things. So we started a study on motherhood. We got more gals out to that Bible study than we had had in a long, long time. And you know why? Because it was meeting a need. There was a real need. And they would bring their non-Christian neighbors. It was so exciting. And a gal that was working on a committee with me said, okay, now as soon as we finish study on motherhood, we're going to do an in-depth study on Galatians. And I just took a deep breath and I said, well, I think that would be fine down the road a ways. I think right now we better keep on meeting some needs in people's lives. See, why is it that there are so many hurting people in the church today? Needs are not being met. Now, I love in-depth Bible study. I grew more through chapter analysis studies that I did with the Navigators than anything else. I love them. I'm not against that kind of study, and I had to keep telling that girl that I was not against it. But I just felt like we must meet people's needs. And a verse that the Lord gave me was from Titus 2, 3, 4, and 5, where it talks about that the older women are to disciple. They're to teach the younger women. And then it lists the things there to teach them. Well, one of the things is they're to be keepers at home, the idea of taking care of their children. So I said, well, I just really feel God has spoken to me about this, and this is what we are to be doing, is to teach these younger ones. And someone said to me, well, yeah, but I'm too young to teach a younger one. Aren't you older than somebody else in your church, you know? I mean, you may be an older woman to somebody else in your church, so no matter how young you are, there still are things that you can teach and share and pass on to younger women in the church. Then some other ideas. I don't know how many of you have heard of the MOPS program, Mothers of Preschoolers. Excellent program. It might have been started in Denver. I am not sure. But several churches up there are using it, and up in Fort Collins, I know. And what they do is it's about a 2.5-hour morning, one day a week. And they start out with they start out with refreshments, you know, coffee and something good to eat. And then they have a special speaker. It might be a pediatrician. It might be a Christian gal sharing something like on motherhood. It's not an in-depth Bible study by any means, because it is a recruiting tool. Then they have a craft for about a half an hour or 45 minutes. They are getting more young gals from the neighborhood into the church than almost any other way. You know, it's always hard, isn't it, to get out and get neighbors. And I know our church is located in an area where it's just loaded with new homes where a lot of young couples are with young children. So we're excited about taking our study from where it is now and working into that. At the same time, we'll offer a more in-depth study for the gals that would like to do that. But we're really excited about using this as a tool. And we had someone at our... Oh, Tom Trento. Have any of you ever heard of Tom Trento? He's really speaks out on the abortion issue, right to life, and other such contemporary issues. And he was at our church teaching a Sunday school class one Sunday morning, and he was talking about Frank Tilpah's comment about the church often being a fortress. You know, we build this big fortress and build a wall around it and carry on everything within there, and we don't reach out. And he said, it's kind of like, here's this big fortress, and here's your wall around it, and a few of us in the church will creep out and climb over the wall and down the other side and grab a non-Christian and creep back up over the wall and pull them back into the fortress. I love that illustration. That's just what we do. We pull them back into this fortress. And I think for a church to really become vibrant and alive, we've got to have an outreach, however we do it. And I think the women's ministry can be used to that greatly, because then the women could, you know, get their husbands coming to church later on. I wish I knew more about the MOPS program, tell you more in detail, but it is an idea, and I could find out for you if any of you are interested for your church, if you want to ask me. Then for singles, now our church does not have a big singles ministry, but there are several churches in Denver that do, and they are very successful with their singles groups. One church especially, South Press, has done a lot in the area of discipling. They have some really good discipling programs going on. And I know there's one gal in our church that has been asking and asking for an evening Bible study because, of course, she works all day. And I think we're making a mistake not to start up something in the evening. And I need to talk to a gal in church to maybe work on something like that. And if you were going to do that, I suggest you try. Do a study like The Power of Encouragement. Or another one that we did this year was on Friends and Friendship from Jerry and Mary White's book. Excellent study. And you know, one of the things I found, not very many women that I talk to in the church have a good friend. Not very many do. They do not know how to make a real close friendship. And I think one of the characteristics of a disciple maker is that we would know how to be a good friend and to make a good friendship. And I highly suggest that you read that book. I'm sure they must have it in the bookstore downstairs. They may have a little workbook with it. We didn't use that. We made up our own questions from it. But it's excellent. And I'd say that that can be used with married gals or single gals. That would make a bit of difference. But it's meeting a need. It's meeting them where they are, and they're attracted to that, and that's what's important. Okay. I wanted to mention retreats. We have had good success with retreats. We come down here to Glen Eyrie, which is great, and we just go Friday night and all day Saturday. And it's a nice way to mix the married gals and the single gals. I don't know, it just seems like we've really developed a good relationship there because of the retreats. Last year we did something that I felt really contributed to discipleship. They had a panel of, there were about five, I guess, on the panel, and each one told of someone who had been a mentor in their life and what that person had taught them and what that person's life was like. It was stirring. It was really stirring. I can't tell you how many would, you know, come up afterwards and comment on it. Just sharing about someone who had taken the time to care for them, disciple them, meet needs in their lives. And I thought, well, that set a good stage for discipleship in our church. And that also encouraged some of the younger gals who are becoming disciple makers to reach out as well. Oh, and another thing that I use, I love to do crafty things. I took a course in calligraphy this spring, and a young gal in our church that I've been praying for, she's just a sweetheart. She and I took a calligraphy class together. We had the best time writing back and forth to that class. We had some of the best talk times. And she's the kind of gal that she prayed before she moved in her neighborhood that the Lord would use her. She said, I didn't ask him specifically for how he would use me. I just prayed he'd use me. She has more people coming to our church. They just come to her for some reason, Christians and non-Christians. One friend is a Jehovah's Witness background. Her husband's Catholic background. They're coming regularly, and she's been witnessing to Diane, and it's just really been neat to see that. But I felt like, well, that was well worth the while, you know, to spend that time with her in the car. So you might think of some things that you could do with gals. And, you know, disciple-making isn't just getting together with a girl and going over certain things every week. That's really not disciple-making. Disciple-making is pouring your life into someone and giving yourself to them and doing things together. Well, I think what we've been talking about, how we attract people, we attract them by meeting their needs. My husband uses a phrase, I don't know if it's very feminine to use, but to attract people, we need to scratch where they itch. But that is true. It's that finding that open nerve. Leroy Imes used to talk about that in evangelism, you know, finding a person's open nerve. And that's something that we need to do. Have any of you been to the Larry Crabb Institute? Biblical counseling? Excellent, right? He made a lot of good statements. One of them, I might have gotten from his book. I can't remember if he said it in the seminar or if he had it in his book, but he has a book out on encouragement that is so good, The Key to Caring. And I think it deals a lot with encouragement in the body of believers, in the local church, and how lacking encouragement is. And he made the statement that he feels that the church's biggest weakness today is that we do not know how to relate to each other. People do not know how to relate to each other. And I think that's true. We talked a little before about all these personal problems. Bob and I have never done so much counseling, I don't think, in the last 2-3 years. People with the deepest problems need people, not just necessarily problem-centered people. They're people that have been in leadership in the church. And, you know, marriages are breaking up in epidemic proportions. I guess I'm not going to be surprised anymore about one that I hear. It is unreal. And we've watched some younger couples. It's almost as though they got the idea that it was okay because they had seen some couples that they had looked up to in the church go through a divorce, and they followed right along. I can name two couples like that in our church because of a man who was president of a Bible college and his wife. A great Bible teacher, looked up to. He did it, right? He was able to do it. Well, you know, we're not getting along. Why can't we? I think Satan is on a great attack on people in general, in personal relationships, the family, you name it, whatever it is. I think he is having a great fling. A relative of ours is going to church is very heavy on Bible teaching. And they were having disastrous problems in their marriage. And I suggested on the phone one time that they try going to the pastor. And the wife said, oh no, he never talks to anyone on a personal level. They just rave about his Bible teaching. And it's a little church. It's not like a pastor of a big 3,000-member church where you don't expect him, but a little church. No, he doesn't talk to anyone on a personal level. They got no help. We had to find a counselor for them many, many miles away to help them. I don't know why the church is not seen. When I say the church, I say us too. I mean us too. I don't know why we're not seeing the danger signals that are coming. Good teaching, but no changed lives. Right? Good teaching, no outreach. You know, we're becoming stagnant. And Frank Tillipaw, in his book, In the Church Unleashed, you know, he was talking about this fortress idea. And I just really think that's true. You know, that it's too easy for us to become very comfortable with our Christian friends and to get so busy in the activities of the church that we have no time for neighbors. It's 2 years ago now. But I thought, Gail asked me if I'd be interested in taking a neighborhood friendship coffee study. She had to leave for some reason, and I thought, oh, I've got so much to do. I don't know if I can do that. And then the Lord really impressed it on my heart that I should. So I started leading this study in our neighborhood, and there were several non-Christians in it. And one of the gals was a gal named Judy. She was probably in her late 30s. She had two little children, and she just loved to sit next to me and blow smoke in my face. Just loved it. I could tell. I like people like that, so it really didn't bother me that much. It gave me a headache sometimes, but it didn't bother me that much. And then her friend sat on the other side of me and did the same thing some days. But we'd talk, and she'd argue, and we'd just go back to the scriptures, and I thought, oh, I don't think she likes me. You know, and I like almost everybody, and I thought, no, I don't know, but I don't think she likes me. Well, one day, she came over to the house after the study, after everyone had gone, and she said, I want to talk to you about something. And I said, okay, Judy. And she said, what do you do if you just hate someone so much? Can God love you? And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, a neighbor boy had molested her little girl. And her husband didn't want to do anything about it. And she was just crushed. So we had a good talk that day. I didn't go into the plan of salvation. I just talked to her about God's love, a little bit about forgiveness. So she left. About 3 weeks later, she came down and she told me that she just found out she had cancer of the pancreas. That's a fast-moving cancer. For the next, I guess it was about 4 months, I started just taking her along with a few of the other neighbors were helping her. And then we'd go down and take her to her chemotherapy. And then as Judy got a little thinner, a little sicker, the other neighbors dropped off. You know, non-Christians can't always handle some of that. I was having a hard time, but I felt God really wanted me to do it. One time we were in the hospital and they were having a hard time with her veins, and she was crying and just kind of calling out. Not all I could do was put my arm around her. I said, Lord, I don't know what to say. And all I did was say, Judy, you know, God really loves you. I know this is just awful, but I just want you to think about that, that he does love you, and I love you too. And, you know, she just kind of nodded a little bit, and I didn't know what was going on in her mind. So then she wanted to die at home, and she knew she was going to die, but she wouldn't talk about it at all with anyone. And I started typing verses on cards for her from the Psalms and verses about Christ in the New Testament, and I'd just leave them by her bed when I'd go. And I have to be honest and say to you, there were days when I was very resentful about going down there. She was a chain smoker till the day she died, and that's probably that could have been what caused her cancer. And she'd sit there puffing away, and she'd thank me sometimes for the verses I'd left. Sometimes she wouldn't say anything at all. And I'd keep saying, Lord, you know, when are we really going to see this made clear? And it was on a Thursday morning I went down there and walked upstairs, and she said, oh, I have to ask you about something. And I said, oh, what is it, Judy? And she said, last night I woke up in the middle of the night and Richard was sleeping, and she said, I saw Jesus Christ standing by my bed. Now, what do you think of that? You know, she has this real direct way. What do you think of that, Pat? And I thought, oh, goodness, I don't know. I'm not one who necessarily believes in visions, but I knew the Lord had appeared to her in some way. And she said, well, what do you think? I said, well, Judy, I think he just wanted you to know that he is real and that he loves you so much that he died for you. I said, do you really believe that? She said, I really do. I said, what did he say? Did he say anything? She said, no, he just looked at me. And I, in my heart of hearts, I knew that he was going to take her home soon. I just knew it. Saturday, that was Thursday, and on Saturday, Bob and I had just gotten home from the store, and Richard called and said, could you come down right away? And so we knew that's what it was, and we went down there. And Judy had just died. And Richard didn't know. They didn't have a church. He didn't know where to go. Anyway, Bob helped him with all of the arrangements. They ended up at a really good church nearby. The pastor gave the gospel to 100 people. Probably 4 of us were Christians and among all of those that were there. And I knew in my heart of hearts that Judy had accepted the Lord. And then Richard started telling me about the faith that she had, that she had come to have, and that she had a different outlook, you know, at the very end. And as I look back on that, I thought, yes, Lord, to you, the significance of an individual. You wanted me to spend all those mornings this year, times when I was feeling resentful. You wanted me to be down in that room, just sitting there with her. You know, and many times we feel like if we haven't presented the gospel or done some great thing at that moment that we failed. And the Lord really taught me a lot through that. You know, one person, she's in the kingdom. Who knows who else will come into the kingdom as a result of that, of her. But don't ever overlook the value of an individual. You never know who God's going to choose, and she wasn't the one. In fact, I have to tell you what we did when she first started coming back to that Bible study. Bob said, honey, maybe we should pray that the Lord would keep her from coming to this study. She was such a disruptive factor. And, you know, the Lord knew better than that, so he knew that what was going to happen and take place in her life. So just remember, you know, looking to him and praying that he, who is the great selector, will help you choose. Just one thing I want to close with, and then we'll have time for a few questions. Something that we live by is the idea that everything around us will pass away. All the things we're doing now, our homes, the church building, all these things will pass away. But people and the Word of God will last forever, for eternity. People and the Word of God. And if you give yourself to people in discipling, you know, that's an eternal memorial that you're presenting to the Lord for His glory. And that's what we want, isn't it? You know, we want to live for His glory. Okay, we'll stop with that. And then I had given you those cards to write questions on, but I think I'll just have you ask questions. You know, tell about some of your situations, or if it's not a question and you have a suggestion, I know we'd love to hear it. So I'm just going to open it up to that for a little bit now. Anyone have any questions? Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit hung up on things like procedures. Did you just do it on your own, or did you work through hierarchy in your church? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I had been involved in getting the women's Bible study started, but then I had dropped out for a couple years when I took this neighborhood study that I had. So I just felt like the end of that other year, the group had dropped down to 5. They'd been doing an intensive study in Romans, and it just declined all through the year. And it was so on my heart. So I started praying and then talking around to some of what we call opinion leaders in the church and just telling that I, you know, had a real burden for these young mothers and wondering if we couldn't do something for them. And the structure in our church is set up, we call our women's ministry team our servants team. And we have women in different functions. You know, it'd be everything from someone in charge of the nursery to Bible study to caring for people when they're ill, a caring committee we call it, and that kind of thing set up. So someone asked if I wanted to be Bible study chairman again, and I said, yes, I would. I'd just love to do that. Well, then as Bible study chairman, I was able to push that through. So I think you know, you kind of have to look at what the organizational structure is in your church and then just pray that the Lord will get you into a spot where you can have an influence like that. People are looking for ideas. You know, a lot of people just think in terms of, well, this year we did Romans, this year we'll do James, you know, and we'll go on like that. And again, that's good, and we're going to start offering those book studies, but I think you need to see where you are with needs and try to meet those. And I think some of the other gals, older gals in our church, have gotten real excited about that because they've seen what's happened in the lives of the younger gals. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah. It's frustrating sometimes.
It can be very frustrating. Yes. And I find that sometimes there are women who have been involved in this for a long time and they are set in their ways, right? It's very, very hard. Some of you know what I'm talking about. To, you know, to try to bring in something different. Oh, that's true in the church as a whole. It's not just with the women. It's anybody that tries to implement something new. It's not easy. And the rest you have, yes, do you have a...
Mm-hmm. Go back to one-on-one. Are there procedures to go through on one-on-one and getting?
You mean starting to help some disciple an individual? I think it's winning a heart, winning someone's heart. I think as you began, like using that calligraphy class, getting to know that gal. I mean, I really felt God had something special for that gal, and I liked what I saw in her life. We're still not meeting one-to-one, but it's getting there. It just takes time.
Let's say you've gotten to that point.
Okay.
And you just start with the basics.
Yes.
You mentioned at the beginning prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, their assurance. Then is there any particular procedure, or do you just go as the Lord leads you as far as...
Well, I think there are some procedures you can follow. Now, I debated whether to try to include that today. I felt like we couldn't. I wasn't sure what all they wanted me to cover today, but I didn't include that. I would look at Leroy Imes' book, The Lost Art of Disciple Making. It has some very good ideas in there of what to follow. Bill Hull has a few things in his book on Jesus Christ, Disciple Maker, that you can follow through on. Are you familiar with the 2-7 at all, the 2-7 Discipleship Course?
No. I
have some things up here, some things that if any of you, there's one for pastors and church boards, and then another that's just a little brochure, but in the little brochure it gives some ideas of what that covers. And even if you could get a hold of, the 2-7 series uses the Design for Discipleship Bible Study. And I find that the Design for Discipleship Bible Study has a very nice structured program of what to follow in helping someone. What you need to be sure about, though, if you're doing that, is that you meet needs as you go along and that you don't just follow that structure because there may be some really hurting things underneath that will, you know, enable you to get next to the heart of that person like, you know, a study on some subject wouldn't.
So this is where prayer for sensitivity, mm-hmm. to see what that particular person's need.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
something that I have done with people in that situation is to have them list out some goals for their lives.
That's good.
Personal, physical, et cetera. And through that,
excellent.
They reveal themselves and where they're most needy, most hurting. And then they see it on paper. They have something to work towards. They see their progress. And when you work the tools into that plan and you begin to meet those needs along with the tools, they really see changes.
Right. And along with goals, you might have them list what they feel their weaknesses are and what their strengths are. I've used that a lot. Because then that gives you an opportunity to discuss those areas with them. You know, they put them down on paper, and it's also good for them to think through on their lives, too, to see where they are.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Jan?
Something that I've been involved in for a couple of years that has really been valuable to me, and I think is similar to what you were talking about starting with needs that people have, is what we just call the support group. And just recently, I've been in St. Louis, and this revolves around new seminary wives who've had real needs in the fact that they have just moved to a big city and probably didn't know anybody and had to sell their houses, had given up things, and just had a lot of common needs. And just the kind of thing where we got together once a week and really shared our needs in the form of prayer class. And sometimes it takes a long time.
Yes.
To really establish the openness in the relationship where you really trust one another and that you really feel confident to share what the really deepest needs of your heart are. But and then along with it, you know, we would pray for each other that evening, but also commit to pray for each other during the week. And then to see God work and answer those prayers is really exciting. And out of that came maybe some real things that you could do for that person.
Yes.
Be a friend to them.
It's good.
If you had trouble making a friend, spend time with that kind of thing. And then also we did do a Bible study with it so that we were learning about Christ and how he was meeting those needs in our life. And that, I just really see the value in that. I can see now, though, from today how that could go deeper. How out of that, maybe God could bring two people together and you could do it on a one-to-one basis, go deeper.
That's right.
And that's exciting to me because I haven't really thought of that before.
And see, for a lot of people, it is hard to share. You know, hard to share what you're really feeling inside. It takes time. So sometimes a support group like that can do that. Weta, did you have your hand up? Oh, you did. Oh. So I thought someone did. Yes, you did.
You know, I think the support group is kind of a byproduct of a Bible study many times. We have a discipleship group that there's 17 women, 15 are divorced. And I found that it became a kind of tangent oriented thing because of the hurts that were so deep in so many. And I was just about ready to give up after several years. And God gave me that verse in Jude 20. It says, build up your lives upon the foundation of your holy faith, learning to pray in the power and strength of the Holy Spirit. So the next Monday I came and I said, how did you build up your life this week? And didn't give them a chance to get into their tangents. And do you know, in a few weeks, it turned from a negative thing to a positive thing. So they were very eager to tell how they had built up their life with a Christian friend or some particular thing in a sermon or an answer to a prayer. And it was so beautiful to see.
Oh, that's good. Very good. Thank you.
Just a footnote to add on what you were talking about, Titus 2, 3 through 5. I wonder, too, if it's talking about, you know, as if the older women should help the younger women, and maybe not necessarily chronological age, but maturity level as well. There, you know, a younger woman could be helping an older woman, physically older woman, yet, you know, the younger woman is more spiritual. Or has had more training or whatever.
That could happen. That's right, it could. Did you have your hand up?
Okay.
I didn't want to miss someone.
Could you address the ruling two studies this past year? One was a 2-7, and we've been with them. We're going to book 5, so we've been together for a while. And most wonderful thing about 2-7, you
know, for those of you who haven't been, is that you're together long enough where the facades do break.
Yes, they do.
You can only keep them up for so long.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of, as the leaders, is there a way to balance that amount of times that you find yourself talking to the other gals on the phone and encouraging them, and I felt at times I didn't handle that well. Do you see what I'm saying? That I was spending too much time in neglect of my family almost at times,
mm-hmm.
Because they would call with needs and that sort of thing. And how do you balance that?
One thing I think that I have heard my husband say is that in some ways the 2-7 is a group tool for discipleship. In other words, you can have the group together and you're ministering to them and they're getting to know the Lord better through the quiet times and memorizing verses and all. Then you can begin to pick out one or two gals maybe from that group that you will go on to disciple yourself. But maybe not trying to spend that much time individually with them as you go along. Now, one thing we did in the last group we had is that I tried to encourage a couple of younger gals in the group to help a couple of the others so that I wouldn't be the only one responsible. Now, in your group, you may not have some others that could do that. I'm not sure. I think it's good that they're responding to you and asking you, but I know what you mean about the time. How many in your group altogether?
Five couples.
Five couples, so that'd be 10. That'd be five, including you and your husband?
Four, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Do they call quite a bit?
There have been times.
Uh-huh. That it's a lot.
I think all of us face that whenever we need a study.
Yes, that's true.
Just 2-7. I'm sure you face that with your group of 17 divorced women. How do you discern when they really need you?
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I found in just doing a lot of counseling over the phone, you know, we've done a lot over the phone, it seems like. People will call with needs. And I've tried to ask the Lord to help me discern who are the ones that really need my help or maybe that I could refer to someone else if it's a deeper counseling need. We are very quick to suggest couples go to professional counselors if there's something that's... And the husband or wife go, you know, not necessarily a marriage problem, but husband or wife go to another counselor. If they have a particular thing that they keep bringing up all the time, there might be someone else who would be especially good at that. You might recommend them to that person, that maybe someone else could help them with that. I think we have to keep our priorities right, because I really do feel that my responsibility is first to my husband. And the other thing the Lord has talked to me about is that if I don't disciple our daughter, 14, then I think I will have failed. You know, I feel like she's first before a lot of other women, just because of God's order. But I think we need to pray that the Lord would just cut down. I've prayed at times the Lord would cut down on the number of people that would call. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he doesn't. Most still keeps ringing. But you might think about a few of those things. Any of you have any other thoughts on that? Yes.
I was just thinking about that, that if we get in habit of always asking the Lord to prepare us, even as we're just picking up that
mm-hmm.
receiver, that we would have wisdom and discernment for whoever's calling. It's a quick arrow prayer, but it might help.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Because we wouldn't have had time to pray ahead, we wouldn't have known who would be calling or what their purpose was.
Right.
But some gals can call and occupy and
talk. They can talk forever, I know, and it's very difficult. And I always feel like I'm being rude when I have to, you know, tell them that I need to do something else. But sometimes you have to say that. Nancy, did you have...
Well, with young children like you have, they would be coming home from school and someone would be calling. And I got to the place where I said, my kids are home and I can't call, I can't talk, I'll talk with you later, and
mm-hmm.
set a specific time to get back to them. Then I was in control of the conversation instead of them. Or if it
uh-huh.
was one that I knew always took time with me, I'd say, let me call you back in a few minutes. Then I would be able to collect my thoughts, give time for prayer, and when I call them back, say, I've got just 10 minutes. you know, what can I help you with? Or, you know, so I was in control instead of them in control.
I think it's the way you say it, too, don't you? The way you tell them that, because sometimes gals will say, have you got a minute? You know, and I know it means a half hour. And so, you know, with some, you know, you can give that much time to. And others, you think, no, it'll be just a repetition of what we talked about before. So I've gotten a little bit more brave, you know, and I'm able to say, I've got to do something in about 10 minutes, but I'd love to talk to you for a while. And usually that satisfies them.
And people, I think, are, when you jealously protect your time with your children, particularly when they first come home from school, that's not your problem, but they respect that.
They do. If you tell them why you're doing what you're doing, you know, that I really like to be home and be available to my kids when they're home.
Or, part of our setting the example.
Yes, it is. It's priority. That's right, because some women do have a problem with the telephone, and I've had gals tell me that, you know, that they just are on it all the time. I think we need to close, but thanks so much for your participation. Let's just close in a word of prayer. And Weed, I wonder, would you pray for us?
Father, we're so grateful today for your presence with us and all of the good ideas that have been shared. And Father, to hear the way that you've worked in lives. Again, Father, we are so conscious of your power and your might and your care for the individual. And Father, help each of us with just whatever talents and heart concerns you've given to each of us. We just want to praise you. And God, now as we go back to our homes, we just pray that you bring many of these things to our hearts and mind again. Help us to be those faithful women of God who can reach out and touch others who are hurting. Father, give us the balance of our lives that we need so desperately to still walk before you, and then, Father, to walk with others before you. Let me just give you thanks now for our past time with us, in Christ's name.
Amen. Did you show us all your books?
I don't know if I did. Have you read Frank Telfer's book, The Church Unleashed?